Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. So what's on my mind this week? Banks. And I'm not talking about the place down the street where I keep my modest savings account or the inflated fees I pay for constantly using my ATM card. I mean Wall Street banks. You can't open a checking account at one of these banks. They don't hand out toasters at Christmas time for their good customers. Wall Street banks and Wall Street bankers operate on a different plane, in a parallel universe, maybe. At a minimum, it's an alternate reality where the same rules don't seem to apply, where these masters of the universe float through the raindrops without getting wet, where a conscience is a professional handicap. Bankers, it's as if Gordon Gekko mated with a hyena or maybe a buzzard. Silky suits and silver tongues, their Gucci loafers just sharp enough to stomp on the windpipes of American families. Theirs is a world of dividends and derivatives, billion-dollar bailouts, and buku bonuses. They don't even know what they're selling anymore. As we learn from the meltdown they ushered in, some of them joke to each other about these Frankenstein concoctions they sold to their own customers, their best customers. Bundled securities made worse by bungled oversight. Millions of Americans lost their homes, their jobs, everything they had. Yet these guys are right back at it. The bonuses are back, baby. The Beamers and Benzes, the Hummers to the Hamptons for the weekend, they didn't miss a beat. They're like the herpes virus. They keep coming back. There is no known cure. Wish the same could be said for the rest of the world, because down here, where we mere mortals live, things are still pretty tough. Are they bankers or are they gangsters? A little of both, perhaps. Banksters. Tonight, we're delving into the murky world of high finance, where the reptilian minds of our supposedly best and brightest do one thing. They make money. America doesn't make anything anymore. We used to make steel and cars and locomotives and stuff the world needed and wanted. What do we make now? We make deals. Deals hammered out by these silky smooth salamanders of Wall Street. And I probably shouldn't say that because I've got nothing against salamanders. My guest this evening is Joseph Farrell. I was host for his first appearance on Coast to Coast a couple of years ago. And if you've heard Joe Farrell, you know he digs into areas where few others tread. His latest work, Babylon's Banksters. But this isn't about mere financial shenanigans on Wall Street, what's going on right now. This goes way back and examines the alchemy, what he calls the alchemy of deep physics, high finance, and ancient religion. Dr. Farrell does not believe the current mess is an aberration, but rather the inevitable product of careful planning by an international cabal over many generations, money wizards, if you will, the same class that's always controlled high finance and thus controlled the world. Coming up in an hour, Joseph Farrell will be here to talk about banksters. Let's take our first break, open up the phone lines right now, come back and talk about some of the news items that caught our attention this week, and then hear what's on your mind. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us tonight. Should be a good one. Dr. Joseph Farrell joining me at the top of the hour to talk about Babylon's banksters, the ancient roots of our financial meltdown. So are you watching this disaster unfold in the Gulf? I sure hope so. I mean, another week has gone by, and still the oil continues to ooze out into the ocean. The tar balls are now landing on beaches. Poisonous gunk eking its way into fragile estuaries and wetlands. A disaster, no matter how you look at it. And to the surprise of no one, we even talked about it last week on the show, to the surprise of no one, the estimates on the amount of oil that's leaking out of that hole are now confirmed to be ridiculously low. What did they say last week? 5,000 gallons a day? Ridiculous number. And get this, in Congress, there's talk of a bailout. Pro-oil members of Congress say, poor BP, shouldn't have to pay for this massive cleanup all by itself. There's talk of a bill that would make the company responsible only for the first 5 days of the cleanup, which is about $400 million or so, put limits on its liability. That's just great, isn't it? This company makes about $3.9 billion an hour worldwide. Since the spill, BP has raked in about $3 million in revenue. I think they can afford to clean up their own mess. And any member of Congress who tries to stick the taxpayer with this bill should be kicked out summarily. Keep an eye on that one. We do have an article posted on the Coast to Coast website about just how bad things could get in the Gulf if a hurricane hits down there. While this cleanup is in progress and hurricane season is nearly upon us, the cleanup isn't even close to being done. So it's not exactly a far-fetched scenario. Webmaster Lex and I have put together other matters of interest. We spoke last week about British hacker Gary McKinnon, who broke into a number of U.S. Defense Department and NASA computers some years ago, and his efforts to keep from being extradited to the U.S. With a new government in place in London, it now looks like he will be tried in Britain instead of coming to the States for a trial that could have put him behind bars for decades. I've been in communication with Gary's mom, Janice, who we had on the program a couple of months ago to talk about the case. She is, of course, delighted with these new developments, but scared about what's going to happen next because the people who wanted to make an example of Gary haven't given up. Of course not. We'll be watching this. Also on the website, a crypto story about a weird monster-like creature found north of Ontario. We've got a photo attached to this news report. Pretty fearsome-looking weird beast, snarly bald face, a tail that looks like a rat. Take a look for yourself. I am told that some experts, Lauren Coleman and others, think that this is a mutated mink. You can take a look for yourself, see what you think. We found an article about Voyager 2. Remember the little space probe launched many, many years ago and which is still sending back data and signals from the edge of the solar system? There was a glitch a couple of weeks ago, and scientists started getting these strange signals in what some interpreted as a weird language. A couple of crazy people speculated that aliens must have captured the Voyager and they were using it to send us back messages. Fanciful idea. I like the way they think, but NASA scientists sort of jiggled the computer link this week. They've now established or reestablished contact with Voyager and control of the spacecraft, and it's an amazing accomplishment to still be getting useful information from that hardy little probe after all these years. We also found an article about a new study. It's about lies, and the researchers say kids who learn to lie early do better in life in general. It shows, I guess, that they have some sort of advanced brain capabilities if they can lie at an early age. Makes you wonder how many of them grow up to become bankers. Interesting study. Take a look when you can. If you have gone to the theater recently to see the new Iron Man 2 movie, you might have noticed an intriguing trailer that's been playing or in theaters around the country for a movie that's not due out until next summer. It's called Super 8. The producer is a guy named Steven Spielberg, the director, J.J. Abrams. It's apparently about some sort of monster that escapes during transit from, you guessed it, Area 51. Can't wait for that one. Also on the website, an update on a story that I have followed for the past 2 years, and we've talked about it on this program. 2 years ago this month, something crashed on the bank of the Colorado River, south of Needles, California. A lot of people saw it blazing through the sky, coming from the northeast toward the southwest. We have discussed it on the show a couple of times. It crashed down there, and then a bunch of military-type helicopters came and snatched it up and took it away. I wrote a new TV piece about this, a new theory on what it might have been, what the object was. We went down and re-interviewed the key witnesses, including the former cop, Frank, who's been on the show, and the man known as Houseboat Bob. And you can see what they think of this new theory if you click on the link when you get a moment. One other story you should read, if you love a good burger, yummy, juicy burger. How does this sound? A slab of pink slime topped with delicious ammonia. Because slime and ammonia are pretty common in ground beef sold in stores and served in school lunch programs across the country. Boy, is that lip-smacking good. And if you don't believe me, check out the article we have posted on the website. It's about some new research about this one particular company. One final item that Lex has posted on the website. I don't know if you follow this controversy about a UFO source. His name is Source A. Been making a lot of noise on the internet about who he might be and what he knows. Source A is really controversial. Supposedly, is a deep throat guy, knows all about the UFO secrets and who's been keeping the files and crashed saucers and things like that. Grandiose claims about inside secrets and what goes on behind the scenes. Well, a website known as Reality Uncovered did some excellent detective work looking into who Source A might be. And we've got a posted article there. You can check out the work they did for yourself. It's pretty entertaining. Going to the phones now, east of the Rockies, Keith in Louisiana. Hi, Keith.
Yes, sir. I've been thinking about this Gulf Oil mess, and, you know, of course, I felt a lot like you do. I'm a social conservative. I'm very conservative. Last, I hadn't voted for either party, Republican or Democrat, for the major parties in 24, 30 years now. I've been going third party. But anyway, I'm sort of a Pat Buchanan type. But anyway, the thing about it is I got to thinking about, you know, initially what happened. You know, I ticked off at BP and all them over it. And anyway, but I got thinking, you know, it's not like they went down there and deliberately did this. And, you know, they could be making tens of millions of dollars off that oil as opposed to paying out $75 or $100 million. And it just wouldn't make sense for them to do something like that deliberately. But they should be held liable to the max for all of that. It kind of sickens me when I listen to somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who he has enough social conservative, he's conservative enough on social issues to keep an audience, but in reality, him and Sean Hannity tote water for big business and the Republican Party.
Well, I don't know why it would be a conservative value to protect BP. They screwed up here. You know, there's probably a lot of blame to go around. A lot of people messed up. There was some sort of a device that should have been able to prevent this blowout if it had been in place, but BP was exempted. So the federal government has to take some of the responsibility, too. But you saw those guys when they're in front of Congress. BP was pointing at Halliburton, and Halliburton pointed at another company, and everybody was ready to share blame. I just hope that the American taxpayers don't get stuck with this. We're going to have to pay for enough of it as it is.
Yeah, like I said, I think they should be held responsible, and I kind of think it's particularly if they went really cheap on it and didn't do everything they should have done, like put down that special device they had. That's not my field of expertise, but I know it was something that was supposed to have been down there to prevent that sort of thing. If they didn't do that just to try to get out, you know, go on the cheap with, they should go to jail for it, where most of them belong to start with. But anyway, that's, of course, my opinion.
Well, Keith, are you living on the coast itself? I know you're calling from Louisiana. How close are you to the damage?
Oh, about 300 miles. I live up here way up north in North Louisiana. now, my ex-wife's people, they're all from from South Louisiana. I remember the only way they, of course, speak the Cajun French, and the only way I ever knew they was talking about me is when they were laughing. they live down there.
Well, you know, people of Louisiana have been through a lot over the last couple of years. They sure didn't need this. The environment didn't need it. The ocean didn't need it. The American people didn't need it. That's for sure. Keith, thank you for calling. Call anytime. West of the Rockies, Suleiman in Gardena, California. Hi, Suleiman.
How are you doing, George? First, I'd like to say that Gina, that takes your calls, absolutely fantastic.
You betcha.
All right. And I'd like to ask all your 20 million listeners out there tonight to send prayers to all the people along the Gulf State area there in regards to that oil spill, because it's going to get worse before it gets better. George, I have a title of world event psychic. My name is Suleiman, and I'd like to alert you to and your listeners to several things that I've seen recently in visions, and possibly you can discuss them tonight or the next time that you're on.
Suleiman, have you been accurate in your predictions in the past?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what I was getting ready to tell you.
Okay.
When, if you write my name, Suleiman Edmondson, and you go to Google, you'll find that it'll take you to several different sites with my predictions on there. One of the most recent was the aircraft, the jet passenger plane that crashed in Russia, causing the death of the president of Poland, his wife, so forth and so on. 2 days before that occurred, I had a vision of the funeral processions in regard to that. And I wrote on the internet that it was a 9/11 attack against Poland by Putin and Russia, and that the second attack would come to the United States. This was 4 days before the attempt in New York. That's on the internet. What I want to alert your listeners to is that North Korea and South Korea are moments away from going to war, which will affect the United States. Two is that Los Angeles is the next 9/11 target, and it's in motion now for it to occur. Three is that there is going to be a military confrontation between the United States and Mexico along the Mexican border, and that's coming shortly. Four is that the hurricane season is going to initiate what I call the black rain all across the southern states, going into the central parts of the United States. It's going to destroy a lot of the crop-bearing areas in the United States and cause a lot of people to become very, very sick. These things are about to occur, and they're about to occur quickly. And the last I want to make a statement is that I see a food crisis coming to the United States towards the end of this year, and I'm telling people out there now to prepare for it. The only way that we can circumvent all these things that I've seen is prayer and belief in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Okay, Suleiman, I got to say, I hope you're wrong on all of them, but thank you for the call. We'll keep an eye on your predictions. First-time caller. Yeah, thanks. First-time caller, Claude in New York. Hi, Claude.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. But when you were talking about bankings, the banksters.
Yes.
Well, you know, we put out a lot of money to bail them out, which they should have went through the procedure of Chapter 11 or whatever on their own. They caused the problem. They should have resolved the problem. Now, what proof do we have that these banks and GM paid all this money back? We don't have any proof. Or where did this money go to?
Well, I think there are some accounting procedures that there are some folks who are watching this pretty closely. You've got two parties in Congress, for example, who hate each other's guts, who would love to find out that there's some sort of scandal in that regard and pin it on the other guy. I got a feeling a lot of people are watching that fairly closely. I did see the commercial from GM that they had paid back all their money, and I think that's probably a bit premature on their part to claim they have paid it all back, that they still owe some. And I agree with you that maybe we should have let some of these banks go into bankruptcy and let the system play out. However, what we don't know, the intangible, what we don't know is how bad it would have gotten if we hadn't bailed them out. You know, I think everybody had to hold their nose in giving these banks all this money. Nobody liked it, not members of either party. The American people sure didn't like it. But we have to wonder, how bad could it have been if they did fail, if all these banks did go under? And that we just don't know. What do you think?
I think that it should have started from the ground up into the bank. If we're going to bail out banks in that nature, well, what about the people, the investors that have invested in these banks? What about their bailouts? Because the banks could say, well, we're still in the red, even though the first bailout we gave, I mean, it was like a slap in the face. They went on parties. They went on. They gave out big bonuses. And they're saying, well, we screwed the public again, and now they're giving us more money to have another party.
Well, no argument here. You know what amazes me, and it came out when these bankers, that group of bankers, appeared before Congress to tell their stories of woe, that, you know, it came out that they bet against their best customers. Here they are giving out information to these investors, people who have trusted them, given them big piles of money, and these guys are, in effect, betting for their customers to lose, betting against America, in effect, betting against the American public, and getting away with it.
And the thing is no one, not one of these people went to jail or been investigated for any type of extortion.
Well, we do know that there are some investigations underway. How serious those will be, where they end up, who knows? All these guys can afford really great lawyers, so, but we can hope for the best because somebody should go to a jail. You're absolutely right. Thanks for the call. We'll be going back to the phones after this break. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast. Coming up at the top of the hour, Dr. Joseph Farrell is my guest. He's written about some really interesting stuff over the years, the Giza Death Star, the Philadelphia Experiment, the Nazi Bell, Roswell, and the Reich. And now he's looking at Babylon's banksters. And we'll jump right into that at the top of this hour. In the meantime, going back to the phones and get to as many of your calls as we can. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. We're heading back to the phones to see what's on your mind tonight. Steve in Highland Falls, New York, on our wildcard line. Hi, Steve.
Hey, George. How you doing? It's good to talk to you again.
Okay. What's going on?
Not much. I have a question for you, and I don't know if you feel comfortable answering this or not. I remember a few months back, Mr. Norrie had a guest on. I believe his name was Mr. Rhodes, something Rhodes. He was talking about Men in Black and reptilian aliens and whatnot. And he was talking about how he was threatened either indirectly or directly because of his line of work. I was just wondering if because of Coast to Coast AM and the nature of subject matter that you guys have, if you've experienced any problems outside of your broadcasting that would kind of make you a little timid about some of the subject matter that the show does take on, something of that nature.
Well, nothing like a threat. I would always wish that, you know, there was like a knock on the door and somebody and Men in Black stand there and tell me to shut up and knock it off, because in a way that would be confirmation I'm on the right track, you know, that I'm doing something that that they don't want uncovered. That's never happened. And maybe it's because I'm doing something that they want done. Maybe it's because it is so insignificant what we do. That they don't worry us about us at all. I know that there have been people monitoring my stuff over the years when we were first doing these Area 51 stories, six different people who called to give me information over the phone at KLAS-TV were visited and were told to shut up. And I have their names, and I can tell you the people who claim to have visited them from different agencies and even a couple of private industry guys who told them that they were being watched and things of that sort. I'm pretty sure that my phone was monitored for a while. I know that a couple of the guys who were following myself around and a couple of us others at that time, they were doing the work. They were tailing us, and they told us later after they got out of the service that they were doing it. So there is some interest in these subjects. We know that. We know it because of government documents that have been released over the years, secret studies of things like UFOs and paranormal attempts to harness strange and exotic technologies. So I'm sure that somebody listens in to Coast to Coast, but so far nobody's come and told me to keep my mouth shut.
Wow. Well, I will respectfully disagree with you on one point. I think that the work you guys do there at Coast to Coast is, in fact, significant.
I'm not saying it's insignificant. Okay. I'm just saying it, maybe that's one explanation. I'm just looking at a range of things. Yeah.
Understood. I misunderstood you, sir. Well, thank you very much. Take care, George.
Okay. Sure thing, Steve. Thanks. Charisse in Dixon, Illinois. Hi, Charisse.
Hi. I have something very interesting that I came across, and I want to know if you heard of it, too. It's a possible earthly explanation for the Rendlesham landing. So-called UFO landing. It's called the 67th ARRS, and if you just type it into any search engine, you'll come up with the article I'm talking about. It was a neighboring base that they claim that they pulled the hoax on the airmen in 1980 December, and that it was a triangular shaped capsule of some sort. I mean, they go into a lot of detail with their technical vernacular, which I kind of can't do. I'm just not, you know, oriented that way. But I read the whole thing, and if you just put 67th ARRS, you'll come up with it. And but at the end of the article, the guy said, I doubt that this will be, you know, this will be made very public because everyone wants it to be aliens. And I have a question I want to ask you.
Well, hey, let's not leave that one. Let's stay on this one for a second if you're going to change the subject.
Okay.
So, because it's only been, 30 years since this explanation for Rendlesham comes out? So, there probably are people who would like it to be aliens. There are also a lot of people around the world who'd like just the straight story, because the military has lied about this stuff and changed its story repeatedly over the years. And now just listen for a second. If there is some sort of a device that we have that floats through trees like that emits radiation, that can fool our military personnel, some ranking officers, in this way, where is it? Because they sure haven't uncorked it. It hasn't been unveiled. If we had technology like that decades ago, where is it? I just would say that the people in charge of muddying the waters on these kinds of stories are a lot better at their job than people like us here at Coast to Coast are at ours, because, you throw something out like that as an explanation, and there's a chunk of people who are happy to jump at it and accept it, whether it fits the facts of a situation or not. Example is Roswell. I mean, Roswell is so hopelessly polluted now. There's so many different stories that have come out of the government. And recall, it's the government that put out the story about the flying saucer. It's not the UFO crazies who put it out. It's the military. And they've changed their minds so many times that I'm not sure we would ever get to the bottom of Roswell. And I think the same thing might be true for Bentwaters Rendlesham. This story, and I'm not familiar with it, but I would say that what you're describing to me does not fit the facts as we know them about that case. But I'll be happy to look into it. What else was on your mind, Charisse?
Well, whenever I would present this to people who believe in aliens and like on the internet, and I like to bring up alternate explanations of things, even though I've seen so-called UFOs myself, I just like to bring up alternate explanations, but people get so hostile and mean and crazy. Why is it? I mean, I know you're not a psychologist and neither am I, but I would like your own opinion as a human being and a professional, knowledgeable person as to why people need, for it to be aliens, and then they get really upset if you try and put a crack on that. I mean,
I think one thing they get upset about is people like yourself who would declare that people need it to be aliens, because, I've talked to a lot of people who claim to be abductees over the years. They don't need it to be aliens. They don't need it at all. They want it to go away and stop invading their lives. And it's not like they are worshiping aliens or preparing for our space brethren to come and supplant God in solving all of our problems. These intrusions are not expected. They're not wanted. They have terrible consequences for people's lives. And then someone comes along and it brushes it off with a wave of a hand saying, well, you must need it to be aliens. I think a lot of the problem comes from decades of ridicule, and it's not an accident, where our government talked about this in the early 50s, of instituting a program of ridicule. People that see UFOs should be ridiculed, and that's the way it's worked out. Whether that program was ever instituted or not, that's exactly how it's worked out. And I think a lot of people get their feelings hurt, and so they do get emotionally involved in the topic. They know that they've been lied to. They don't exactly know that these are aliens or where they're from. I mean, we don't know the answers to any of the big questions, but the intrusions happen. They've happened all over the world. They've happened for hundreds of years to people who don't ask for it. So I'm not quite sure that it's fair to say that people want to believe in aliens or have these intrusions in their lives. I'm sure it's true for some, but I think it's unfair to say it's true for most.
Well, I just think it's also unfair to make the word UFO synonymous with extraterrestrial humanoid intelligence visiting this Earth from other planets.
I agree with you.
Okay, that's fair then.
Yeah, I agree with you. UFO means unidentified, and I also am bothered by the assumption that it's the things we see in the sky are extraterrestrial. Let's jump into conclusions, and in most cases, we don't have enough information to prove it. I think there are other alternate explanations, Charisse, that you were talking about that might fit the situation better than the ET hypothesis. It doesn't get as much play in the media because it's harder to explain. But I think that those explanations need to be explored, and good scientists would do that. If scientists had the guts to study things like UFOs, they could apply scientific standards and principles and maybe come up with honest explanations for some of these cases, but they don't. You know, they come up with declarations instead of investigations. They wave these things away and explain them with the flimsiest of bits and pieces of information without investigating them. And I think that is where a lot of the frustration of the public comes from. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Wildcard line, Lewis in Houston. How you doing, Lewis?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Okay.
I just want, you know, most of the country does not understand how this oil spill in the Gulf is affecting a lot of the people who live on the Gulf Coast.
Well, let's hear it.
It's really not affecting me where I'm at now. I'm in the commercial fishing industry. But a lot of people to the east, you know, from Louisiana all the way over to Florida, are really getting affected by this oil spill. And us, like the rest of the country, just, you know, to say a prayer for them. You know, I'm in the professional fishing guide industry. And a lot of my brothers in the same business to the east are having a really hard go at it right now. They're really not getting the people coming in there and, you know, on fishing trips, they're getting cancellations. It's really tough for them.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be tough for a while. Now, are there any projections that this is going to cause problems for you if the oil keeps bubbling up there?
You never know. You know, a hurricane comes in, it could push it back to the west. It could really affect us on around the, you know, the Texas coast. We don't know. We just pray every day that everything will somehow be taken care of. But it's just a natural incident. You know, as part of the petrochemical industry, things happen.
Well, I'm gonna have to disagree with you on that one, Lewis. I mean, things do happen, and you know, but you at least like to try to take all appropriate precautions to make sure it doesn't. And I don't think we did in this case. I don't think they did. You know, but
they probably didn't. But you know, it's a very dangerous industry that those people work in, and you know, it's unpredictable. It's not a complete science what they do.
Absolutely right. You know, we forget. We see all the oily birds and the problems on the beaches. We forget that 11 people lost their lives. 11 families are in mourning there. And the men who died are sort of lost in the shuffle in this. Thanks for the call, Lewis. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Incog in Louisiana. I'm sorry. Okay, Bob in Eagle Rock. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Let me pull over here for a second. Shut the car down.
Okay.
I had a suggestion for a new topic for you that you may not have heard about. Have you ever heard of Skytran?
No.
Okay. Skytran is a system of elevated individual pods, smaller than a car, but it's capable of carrying 2-3 people. And they're computer controlled. And they'd be in grids in such a manner, like, say, in L.A., you would be able to walk to it from any house, wherever you're at, get in the pod, go to your destination and get out of the pod and walk to work. And the pods could go up to 200 miles an hour. They'd be magnetically levitated. So there would be no, the wear will be very, absolutely minimal.
Sounds like the Jetsons.
It does sound like the Jetsons, except the technology is already here. I initially had the idea for this myself and had a YouTube deal that a friend of mine, Gozel, who's an internet queen, 9 million hits. Anyway, she ran it, put a little deal on there, but I only got about 200 hits. Then I said, well, let me make a blog. I would try to get people to go to the blog. Then I had trouble finding the blog, and I found Skynet, and this guy was an engineer, created all this stuff. He's already got the engineering done on it. He's got the plans, and he's got NASA Ames working on it. The only difference between his and mine, I wanted to cover the road with a canopy with solar cells on top, so you'd be powering it directly with the rails underneath that.
So it follows a track then, right?
That's what I was going to do. His is going to be basically on poles. So either way, this could... It could eliminate virtually all automotive traffic. I mean, because you can carry so many cars at that kind of speed, and it's so much cheaper than the rails. The guy who's doing this is Doug Walensky, an incredible person. Once I started reading his website, Yeah, he's currently 71 years old, and he's still running up in the mountains and doing stuff. He worked on that, the Apollo project. He built the car. Remember Evel Knievel when he jumped the Snake River?
Sure.
That was his design. That was his car. He worked on the stealth bomber. He did the with a carbon fiber. That was part of his stuff. So he's got some heavy credentials, and he has this. He recently just came up with an invention that I think is real cool on the wind generators. These things wear out because they're running all the time, and you're gearing the wind generator down to the you know, the motors, and they're, since they're running all the time, you have to replace those gears all the, you know, and you have to go up and crawl up in those little 600-foot nodules. He's come up with a gearing system that uses magnets rather than gears, so you can do your reduction, and there's no physical contact on the gears. So the man is really quite a genius.
Well, Bob, I appreciate the suggestion. We'll have to look into that for maybe a future show. SkyPods, thanks for the call. Dan in Pittsburgh. Hi, Dan. Dan, are you there?
George?
Yes.
Yeah, pleasure talking with you, George. Hey, George. Hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Oh, the thing I wanted to talk to you about was the Federal Reserve System. Basically, they're the ones that it was put in place in 1913 as a group of private central bankers. And you may want to discuss this with your next guest, that they're basically the ones who manipulate the money system. And they were put in place basically to eliminate the competition from smaller banks and also to pass any losses that they would have on to the federal taxpayer. All I'd like to know is how could we be buy stock in this private bank that is really running our country into the ground for the last 100 years?
I'm no expert on that. I think we should probably speak to Joseph Farrell about it, but it is a weird kind of a hybrid. It's somewhere not exactly a government institution, but it works with the government. I wish I knew more about Federal Reserve. It's a really interesting topic. And I know that it plays a central role in all sorts of conspiracy theories that come up, and I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, but Dan, I do intend to get into that subject with Joseph Farrell, so I hope you'll listen in on our international. Go ahead.
There's a great George called The Creature from Jekyll Island. It tells how the Federal Reserve came about and how they have really manipulated this country for the last 100 years. It's by author Edward Griffin, I believe. It's a fascinating book, and it really shows how the Federal Reserve really manipulates the money system to control the American public, and how they really take care of big business. They kind of work hand in glove.
Okay, well, thanks for the recommendation. I know that we've covered the topic before, that George and Ian have talked about the Federal Reserve, and we will look for that author. Thanks for the call, Dan. Terry on our international line calling from Ontario. Hi, Terry.
Hi, George. I got a question for you.
Okay.
I have a conspiracy theory that involves Area 51 that people aren't really talking about. There's evidence on the Internet, on YouTube, about the moon landing, whether it's a hoax or not a hoax. And I just like people to take a look, have an independent view. What do you say about that?
Well, strangely enough, there's a guy named Bill Casing who lived here in Las Vegas for a lot of years, knew some of the people that first hired me at Channel 8. And Bill is the guy who came up with the scenario that was made into the movie. What was it called? Capricorn 1. And he's the guy that came up with the theory that we didn't really land on the moon. Later, others guessed that it must have been staged, and it must have been staged at Area 51. The story has now sort of taken on a life of its own. I know that that I looked at some of those photos and the shadows and things of that sort, and they are intriguing. But there are websites where NASA scientists and others have directly refuted at least most of the major points that have been brought up by the folks who don't believe we really went. I happen to believe that we did go because, in part because of talking to astronauts, people like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's been a guest on this program. This is a guy who speaks openly about UFO secrets being kept. I suspect that, if we didn't really go, that he would tell us that we didn't really go. Terry, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Coming up, Dr. Joseph Farrell to talk about Babylon's banksters right after this. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM.